Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to this supersized edition of the interview podcast. I am Pod Vader, supersized because I have three interviewees on today's show. Of course, I brought back the Battle of the Mats. Matt Chatham and Matt Williamson will rejoin me to preview Wild Card Weekend, but I threw in an extra guest, Zach Report of the TPC, APC, the TAPC. The APC, Acme Packing Company podcast. It's a Packers podcast on SB Nation, so you're going to want to check that out. I talk with him a little bit about the Packers success, and you'll hear why he's a guest on today's show. If you want to be a guest on today's show, you can reach out to us. Zach reached out to us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. I'm also at The Real Pod Vader on Twitter, which I think is more directly on how he reached us. Or it might have been, I don't remember. Doesn't matter. In any case, reach out to us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can reach out to us via email, nextfanup@gmail.com. And of course, we'll get you on the podcast in that manner of fashion. Or if you don't want to be a guest and you just want to check out some of the stuff that we do, you can always check out our website. We ask that you do. Nextfanup.wordpress.com. All right, so those are all the ways that you can get in touch with us. Why don't we just jump right into it with the Battle of the Mats? The Mats are back. You know, I should probably consider putting together some sort of little jingle or something for this segment. You know, you might think I used to do that for a living or something like that. But in any case, Matt Chatham from Football by Football is here. And Matt Williamson of the million podcasts available. What are you at, Williamson NFL? That's right.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
The best way to find him and the many podcasts that he does. Thank you, Matt, for joining us once again on this lovely podcast.
It's good to be here.
Awesome. So everything that happened last week pretty much went according to plan, especially as we discussed it. And this week, I think we got three really interesting games and one snoozer of a game that will only interest me and Chatham.
Do you still have that stupid car?
I don't have the stupid car. It died and I donated it to charity.
Good. Matt, are you aware of this thing?
I'm not aware of the car. Tell me car stories.
Dude, he has a Patriots mobile
picture. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
That had like over 100,000 miles on it. The whole thing's decorated in Patriot stupidness.
Wow. And over 200,000 miles on it.
He used to drive at the ESPN parking lot and get and scoffed at.
That's hilarious.
It was featured in ESPN the magazine. It was fantastic.
Well, there you go.
I'm glad it's dead.
Matt, Chatham, what I want to ask you, because let's just get the snoozer game out of the way, because we don't need to talk about that one too much. The betting lines are based on whatever they're based on. And currently the Patriots are favored by 16 points over the Houston Texans. My question to you, though, is, and I know what the answer is, but I'm going to present it to you in this manner. Teams don't go into these games thinking, oh, we should win by 14, two touchdowns. They're not going to coach the game so that they make sure that they're, you know, going to win by the two touchdowns or three touchdowns. They're just going in the game to win it, right?
For sure. You're just trying to figure out where you think their vulnerabilities are. And when you're talking about a game like that, you just presume there's a lot more of them, I guess. You know, you go in saying in the games where it's tight and, you know, Vegas thinks a certain thing, you're not terribly aware of that unless it's wacky one way or the other. But, you know, when you start getting into lines that grow to that level, it's generally because the presumption is the other team can beat you a number of ways. You know, it doesn't have to just go a certain way for the Patriots to win. They can get at them on a lot of different fronts. So I think this is definitely one of those weeks, though, where, you know, you're playing any number of other teams where it's a little more closely matched up. And you might be thinking about, OK, we've got to accomplish A, B, C, D, and E, right? In a game like this, you look really, really closely at what's the one thing the Texans could do. You almost sort of back figure. It's like deconstruction, I guess, or whatever, where you try to figure out how could they beat us? You know, like how could this team could, and they're in the NFL. They've obviously won some games this year. They've got, you know, a lot of people on their staff that people around here respect quite a bit with Romeo Crennel, Rack and Vrabes and Larry Izzo and a lot of and Billy and all, just a lot of familiar faces. So they've been in situations with those guys where maybe you haven't played as well you like in one game, or you stunk, whatever. But then you have to come back again the next time. And I think they know that they have that sort of MO, or at least a DNA, to go back and completely trash it, you know, trash the game plan. You might not even see any of the same plays. So I think they know that they're going about it that way. And they need themselves to know, how could they beat us? You know, like, it's not so much we're awesome, they suck, let's just roll it out there. It's how could this go against us? How could we fail? And then you sort of guard against preventing whatever you do schematically to make sure those things don't happen. And then you attack them on all the areas that they know, you know, they're going to have a problem. So it's obviously an easier game plan to put together, but you do have to do a good job of pinning down those one or two or three things that they could get at you with.
You know what, to expand upon that, Pod, for you guys, I'm sure you guys are familiar with Mike Lombardi, and he's much more familiar with Belichick, and he describes this better than me, but I'm kind of just reciting what I've heard him say on these lines. And he sort of describes it this way, that he says Belichick, more than most coaches in the league, prepares through the week of how not to lose as opposed to how to win. And that sounds like the same thing probably to a lot of listeners, but it isn't. It's kind of like what Matt was saying, is as long as we avoid these situations or these matchups, we're going to be really difficult to beat. And, you know, having Brady and those guys sure helps. And what would really help, Pod, if, and I'm so unhappy it didn't happen this way, but I wish Houston was at Yom this week.
Mm. If the Patriots had to travel to Houston.
Man, I don't see how venue.
You're missing the joke. Come on, Pod. This was, I know it's only been like 8 years ago.
I got the fact that I don't pronounce H's because I'm from New England, but
right, you start with Y's in your vocabulary.
In any case, despite my affliction to H's, one other item here for you, Matt Chatham, from a player's perspective, because I heard LaDainian Tomlinson talk about this on the Football Network, and talking specifically about the boat trip, the New York Giants wide receivers boat trip that occurred on the Monday before their playoff game. They ended up losing. And obviously a lot of that is going to, you know, a lot of fingers are getting pointed at that boat trip, which, by the way, is something that would never happen in New England. Is there that sort of mentality as well as the, hey, we're all in this together, give me your, you know, 3 to 4 weeks worth of focus and let's get this job done? Is that something that really is a thing that teams need to sort of imply, especially on those younger kids that are getting into the NFL today?
Yeah, the thing I would say about how New England would handle that differently than the other, it's not so much the guys don't go off on vacations, because they do. It's just they wouldn't do the shirtless Instagram photo that sort of intimates it's something, you know, that you're not focused, right? I mean, everyone leaves. They do, you know, and the fact that they left together and we're in the same place and we're taking those photos, and then, you know, looks like there's a little weed in the background, the whole thing, you know, that's the kind of thing. It's not so much that they wouldn't go, it's just that it wouldn't do it that way. So in part, a lot of things that sort of beat over your head there is just about, it's kind of like the game plan stuff, like doing avoiding the thing that could hurt you, right? It's not that you're not going to go out and have fun, because guys are. And New England, when we have a bunch of time off, people flee. They go all over the country. They go, you know, I had friends on the team who would go to Jamaica for a little quick 3-day vacation, which is hard to do because you're in the air on, you know, the front and back end of that thing, and you're barely on the beach. But guys do stuff like that. It's not that unusual. I thought what to me was more aggravating about the story was there is, to me, sort of a continuum of irresponsible behavior and stuff like this. And with this one, I actually think it's pretty low, because you're so many days removed from the game. I can certainly think of situations, no specific examples, but that, you know, like a Friday night after you have the short day practice, where, you know, normally we're there till 5-6 o'clock at night. On some of those Friday practices, you're done by noonish, you know, 12, you know, or, you know, 1 o'clock or earlier. So a lot of times Friday nights in a game week, regular season or otherwise, are times where guys will go out, but it's just dinner, light drinks, home and bed, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, you've seen situations where guys will go out on a Friday night. Now, if you did that on a Friday night, you know, there was a picture of all the wide receivers out at Morton's or whatever, shirt off or whatever, with King Louis shots or something, that'd be different. Because I think the biggest thing you want to know as a player is it's going to affect anything that'll happen out on the field. So they introduced that topic to a lot of people that don't have experience with this stuff. And it would be also different if you were in that locker room and, you know, Odell and his guys return and they have three or four practices, and then it manifests itself on the field and they say, okay, never mind. But the reality of the situation was, at least from all accounts from the other guys, he didn't drop a ball a week in practice. He practiced well. So all that really came of this was he invited a narrative that may or may not have been true. So the real lesson there, it's just the Lombardi point. It's everything Bill always told us. It's just avoid the thing that can hurt you, whether or not it's really real. Like that's what becomes a problem. It's a distraction. And distractions, real or otherwise, just you've invited more pressure into your life, and football is a pressure game in and of itself. So just be smart enough not to do that. Just honestly, in that situation, don't take the Instagram photo. Keep your shirts on. Just you don't need to advertise that you're out wherever you are.
M-Dub, let's move to what I do believe is the game of the week, and that's your favorite team traveling down to Kansas City. I think this is going to be a doozy of a game where I think you see teams. I think the two teams are fairly evenly matched.
I absolutely do. I think it's going to be a heck of a game. Kansas City's rested off the bye. I think that's big. Playing at home is big for some reason, and no one around here can figure it out. But Ben Roethlisberger over the last 3 years now has been so much worse on the road than at home. And, you know, you can understand that when it's Drew Brees and he's out of the dome or playing in weather. But Big Ben, I mean, I don't get it. But overall, I do think the Steelers are the slightly better team. What's interesting to me about the Chiefs are you used to look at this team and be like, boy, they're really well coached. They're fundamentally sound. They protect their quarterback. They run the football. They play defense. And that foundation isn't as strong as it has been the last couple of years. But maybe more than any team in the league, they create big plays, you know, and they're very big play dependent in all three phases. You know, Tyreek Hill's a demon on special teams. Him and Kelsey create a lot of big plays on offense. The defense has more turnovers than anyone in the league. They kind of remind me of the Panthers a year ago. Is that a sustainable formula? They rush the passer really well when Houston's there. Houston with a Y. And their run defense isn't as good as you would think it would be. You know, the foundation of the team that's always so strong is a little shaky, but the peaks and valleys are really strong for them right now.
Chatham, what are you looking at when you look at Pittsburgh and Kansas City?
Well, Matt touched on it a little bit, and I think it's sort of that to that issue of where they can get away from at you, or where are they most dangerous? And the Tyreek Hill thing is really, for me, sort of a game changer for that Chiefs team, because you think of them differently. You know, in the absence of them, it's like, okay, who's going to win the plotting match? And you know, Bob Sutton was my old coach for the Jets. He's a linebacker coach, and then eventually was our coordinator there. And I've been through situations like that where you have to game plan against another team that has a very explosive offense. And then you also know that on your side, you've got the one explosive dude. So you're sort of, as a defense, kind of want to keep things under control, because you know your particular group has that, can break it at any time moment. We don't have to win, you know, we don't have to give short fields every time. We just don't have to concede a possession where we just blow up 80 yards of field position in a hurry, because it's sort of a sit and wait in the weeds kind of offense. You know, there's going to be some boring series with the Chiefs, or they'll have their occasional three and outs. They'll have their 5-6 play series where they only, you know, cover 18 yards. So defensively, you don't want to give away chunks yourself, because you're sort of banking upon your own chunks to eventually happen, and you don't want to play yourself out of the game until those things come about. So I think it's a really fun strategic game, quite frankly. And Matt touched on it a little bit there. The idea that you kind of presume that, you know, the Steelers aren't going to do 30 on the road as they would do 30 in Heinz. So you're thinking more low 20s game. So A, what do you have to do to get there? And B, what do you have to do to keep them from going too dramatically above it? So it'd be a fun week. I think the interesting thing I like, you know, just sort of in the weed stuff, that's actually really hard to see on game broadcast tape. It's probably something you don't check until you see the all 22 stuff later. But defensive fronts having to go against Le'Veon Bell, it's terrifying, because it'd be terrifying to a coach, at least, because there's not really a call that works. You know, it's not like if I run such and such call, and all the calls have most of the gaps accounted for, but Bell does this goofy little thing where he stops, stutters, dances, waits. And if you're any defensive lineman, regardless of what the call that's been made, and you peek, you know, you go to one side, you got to look, you got to find out where the back's at. You're pressing your guy, you look left, and as soon as you put a head around the left side of your blocker, he darts right, and he's too quick through that hole. And it's that, you know, all these, obviously, this defense has faced you know, a bunch of different kind of backs throughout the year. None are like this. You don't really get a practice against this. So, you know, maybe they have some practice squad guy this week that's been told to just stand back there for 3 seconds and then dart through a hole or something. But it's really tough to say, well, this is the perfect call to stop Le'Veon Bell in the running game. I don't know if that exists. It's probably just one where you're really preaching upon your guys to be super disciplined this week. You know, it's not the week to go try to get a 5-yard loss on a running play. You're not diving into a gap because he's so good and patient and will take advantage of you being quick. If you're quick, he'll go quick the other way. But it's tough. I can't say that I've, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson is probably one of the best examples of someone I played against where if, you know, he can just kind of pay, not this level of patience, but he would sort of wait back and then dart away from you. So it's cool to watch just from sort of the inside X's and O's, because I know how difficult that's got to be. There's not some magical call.
Matt, along those lines, you know, being in Pittsburgh, I get asked this all the time. Who does Le'Veon Bell remind you of? You know, where does he pattern his style off of? And my answer is always the same. As I always say, like a great artist or a great musician, running backs have their own style. The elite running backs, and I'm not saying he's a Hall of Fame or anything, but obviously he's at the top of his game right now. That you could put them all in boring white Penn State jerseys without numbers or names on the back, and you could say, oh, that's Jim Brown. Oh, that's Barry Sanders. Oh, that's right. Gale Sayers. You know, and to me, Bell fits that mold now.
Yeah, he's so different, and the thing that I say this with utmost respect for the guys, I'm putting him up there as one of the top couple backs in the league. He's just unique and a little bit weird because this notion of patience, and I've actually heard him, you know, in interviews throughout the year, people in the Pittsburgh market have gotten at him and asked him about his style, and I've read different interviews where he talks about why he does it a certain way, but patience is really something he talks about. He's aware that that's his style. And the one thing I would say is sort of a knock, and it's obviously a weird knock for a guy that's getting 180 yards a week, but there are runs within a sequence or a series. If he's getting, say, 4 touches in a 10 play deck or something, where if he would just go, there's actually more yards, I think, there than what he gets. But he's such a home run hitter where he's willing to be overly patient, where the 4 or 5 yard run could have been taken and he might take a 2, to just wait and the next one busts for 9 or 12. So it's a little bit frustrating. I can imagine being his running back coach, because you have to sort of walk that line. You have to say, you know, we blocked this scheme this way. We pulled and put 2 blockers in front of you. We created that hole. That hole was open at that moment. And you sat and danced. Yeah, you did end up getting 4 yards on the backside as you did your thing. But it's got to be, it'd be interesting to at least be a fly on the wall in those kind of meeting rooms, because I know in throughout the game, there's many situations where he doesn't just do the easy thing, but he's so spectacular in the other stuff that it's probably, like you said, an artist, like just let him go and do his thing.
So interesting to know. I had this game, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, as my AFC conference championship game in the preseason. So I do have a lot of interest in watching this game Sunday at 1:00. Let's rewind to Saturday, because in my preseason predictions, I had Kansas City meeting Seattle in the Super Bowl. I unfortunately don't think that prediction is going to come true, because I've seen enough of Seattle, and we talk about Ben Roethlisberger's home road splits. Seattle on the road, except for one game, and ironically enough, it was against my team, has been horrible this year on the road, and they now face a rested Atlanta team that has the best offense in the league, arguably, M-Dub.
Yeah, I do think it's the best offense in the league, and I think Seattle's defense is quite good. There's no question, but it's just not quite the same with Earl Thomas. I think a couple keys here are, especially since Thomas went down, but now with Rashard as the defensive coordinator, you're seeing more man coverage or less of their base cover 3. And I would imagine you're going to see Sherman following Julio around basically the entire game, and that's going to be a phenomenal matchup. I still think Atlanta gets their points no matter what. You know, they can run a ball on you. They can attack your linebackers with their receivers and tight ends. They'll pull out 3 receivers or 3 tight end sets at times. You know, they have a Tyreek Hill type player in Gabriel. Ryan's playing extremely well. But boy, I am not a believer at all in Atlanta's defense. And if Seattle's, I know it's against the Lions, but their running game's been a little bit better lately, and I like the way Rawls ran. If their offensive line can control the game and shorten the game to some degree, I think you have a highly competitive game, but you're right. I mean, the Seahawks road versus home splits are amazing.
Yeah, the thing I'd add to that too is you did touch on, Matt, on the what I thought was sort of the biggest issue here. I'm really looking at those two backs. Atlanta's got some super talented dudes. Tevin Coleman gets a lot less of the shine, I think, because he's not as shifty, but he's also how those guys match. I don't know if it'll be Bobby Wagner grabbing them or one of the other dudes or how they match up, but this could be a big game, especially red zone stuff. I think that's really where you look at Atlanta relative to where they were a year ago, and Matt Ryan had all those red zone interceptions and a lot of disappointing, you know, move the field, but then not get it done deep. The way they incorporate those backs once they get into even the high red area, when you start talking 30 in or even fringe, even beyond that, they cross midfield and all of a sudden, even if you're not targeting them, putting them out in the pattern, you know, stressing guys to take the help player out of the low area so then they can go back to those tight ends and they can go back to you know, Sanu on some sort of under where he's crossing the whole formation. But the fact that they got those two dudes that they can really use as sort of unique chess pieces, I think that makes them really challenging to match up against. And does that mean that, you know, Cam Chancellor gets involved a little lower with a back as opposed to a tight end because maybe they're not as much of a threat there? Just how do they choose to sort of account for that? Is it just backers on backs all day, or is it some other way of trying to come at them so they can keep the help element? But that'll be interesting to watch. The other thing to
Matt,
me,
Matt, interrupt you real quick. I hope you don't mind, but
no, go ahead.
You know, I think that's a great point, but I'm not sure that that's super effective against Seattle because I really like the way KJ Wright and especially Bobby Wagner can match up to those.
See, I saw KJ last year was the one that gave up those two seam routes. Oh, excuse me, not last year, 2 years ago to Gronk. And remember they had, and Gronk scored that touchdown in the Super Bowl where they had sort of committed to just this guy and that guy, this guy and that guy. And at that time it was Vereen and Gronk, your two interior players that you got to figure out a way to match them. And they went backer on backer with those and they gashed them. That was a lot. You know, Vereen had like a 13 catch game and Gronk had a couple huge plays. And I always wonder if, you know, you have in that situation, you got to figure out what you want to help element. Is it going to be a Julio help thing and then everyone soloed and then you're 3-on-2 inside with the backs and backers? But even though those are, you know, Bobby Wagner is a tackling machine, but do I want him out in space against Tevin? Nah. Do I want even Cam Chancellor, who's huge, big hitter, rangy down low, but he's not the most sudden guy either. So in these situations where you have two unique guys, soloing them on anyone is a bad matchup. That's even the linebackers are the best at that. The cover guys, maybe like a Navarro Bowman or something, they still don't want to be out in space with a two-way go on those kind of guys. And again, it doesn't matter all over the field. You'll concede a 5 or 6 yard gain at times, but I'm talking more low red area where one shake move left or right, you're on an island, they fit it in, it's a 5 yard touchdown. It'll be more curiosity to see how they go. You're right, they do have two guys that are pretty athletic and pretty big guys, but no linebacker on earth wants those guys if that's where they're going to sort of put their attention. The one last thought I had,
especially if they play more man, like could be the case here without Earl, you know.
Exactly. So, and then I look at Seattle and just trying to figure out who they are, right? And I think we've all kind of dealt with this throughout the season, kind of waiting for that moment where they become the team that you always remember. Last week, I think, has almost worked it completely discounting. I think the Lions look like you could probably find a couple teams on the AFC side of the draw, maybe a team or two from the NFC that weren't in the playoffs, you know, like Denver or something like that, that could have put it up at least as much of a challenge. It just looked like a very fringe playoff team. And so what do you learn from that? And then I'm backpedaling there and looking at how Seattle looked against San Francisco the week before that and sort of the roller coaster they've been on. I just don't know that this is the team that we've seen in years past because offensively they're so inconsistent. And that's what we'll see. You go down there and you make a good point. Atlanta hasn't been consistent defensively themselves. So maybe that opens up a window for them to be an offense that we don't generally see them be, but you would need to somehow, some way incorporate the tight end more. Jimmy Graham is just, he's a 3 or 4 great play a game guy, but he just never gets to the point where we're seeing 7 to 10 targets and they're hitting at a high percentage of those. It just seems like they're very dependent upon the broken play, big play. We did see some Rawls last week have a pretty impressive day. And I know offensive line play has been a big talking point up there in Seattle throughout the year. But I guess my major question going in is, can they put it together to put most likely need a plus 30 kind of performance out of that offense? And it's kind of hard to come by those numbers unless you're just presuming the Atlanta defense lays down.
Last game that we have on the docket is the Green Bay Packers at the Dallas Cowboys. I felt a lot better about this game at the beginning of the week, but I'm starting to sway a little bit. I originally thought that Green Bay was probably the best choice of all these teams to pull off the visitor upset, quote unquote, upset. But I'm not so sure anymore, especially as, Jordy Nelson will have to play with broken ribs, M-Dub.
Yeah, but at least they got Cobb back. You know, Nelson did a lot of work out of the slot while Cobb was gone. Cook is a difference maker. I like the Dallas defense. It's well coached. They don't throw a lot at you, but they play more man than people think. Maybe they'll play more man in this, which, you know, Green Bay historically doesn't like all that much. They don't get off man coverage as well. But I just think that, you know, when you look at that side of the ball, and this is my sticking point, you know, we talked a week ago, was, boy, I really like the Giants defense, but I have a hard time envisioning them getting to Rodgers consistently. Well, I have a harder time, you know, coming up with Cowboys getting consistent pressure on Rodgers with a really good pass blocking line. And then I don't care who the secondary is. I mean, like, maybe Green Bay doesn't run all that well, but I bet Rodgers has a big day. You know, I mean, I feel very confident in that, even without Nelson, the level he's playing. On the other side of the ball, though, I remember early in the year was, boy, Green Bay's got the best run defense in the world, and nobody's getting anything on them, and now they're meeting the immovable object in Dallas, and Zeke ran all over. You know, I mean, it was a no contest of who the better unit was. And after a week off, I could see that being the case, too. So I really do see a lot of points. I don't think these defenses are well equipped to stop one another. You know, you look at that corner problem with Green Bay now too. I mean, I think Dez will have matchups he likes more than any rookie I can remember. I trust Prescott to play under the big stage, and I certainly trust Rodgers. I really think this is a coin flip game with a lot of points.
I'm kind of excited about this one of really the four. I think a lot of people are, and I'm kind of with you, Pod, a little bit, where I was looking for one where the road team had the best shot. I don't know if it's a win, but I saw an opening Monday line, which is super early, around the fours, where maybe Green Bay is your backdoor cover kind of team this week. But I do look at the Dallas defense, and they're a curiosity. I love this dude, David Irving. We've been, you know, sort of
why
throughout
does he
the
play
year.
Every down?
Exactly. He's like this Eckersley figure that they bring in to get sacks. You know, he's like, right, coming the closer. You specialist. Get one series. Yeah, four sacks in six plays. Like, he's insane. And then we're also getting back in this game, at least reports have been, that DeMarcus Lawrence and Morris Claiborne are both going to play. To what effect, we don't know, but we know that they're getting bodies back. So the bye week was obviously, well, it sounds like it anyway, good for them. But they're a defense of curiosity. There's a lot of interesting pieces there. You kind of don't know how they're all going to fit together week to week. And I'll plug here a little bit for football by football, but on the FBF YouTube page and the website, Brady Papenga is working on a piece where he was part of what Matt referenced, this sort of buildup of, you know, the amazing Packers run defense through whatever it was, five or six games. That's who they were earlier in the year. And then they had the stinker against Dallas. Zeke, I went 180, 190, some a huge number. So they didn't play well, but knowing that same coordinator, knowing Dom, and you know, they'll obviously make adjustments themselves, and it'll be interesting to see what the adjustment is. And that'll probably be the answer to any of these questions, because if the Packers can play more comparably to where they normally are as a run defense, then all of a sudden I think that really changes things. And Dallas, to me, offensively, you know, it's Dez to me is, you know, he can be 150 yards a game guy, or he can also be the four catches for 32 yards guy, where he gets frustrated and, you know, things just don't go in his way and he seems to tank occasionally. So I would love to see if you were a Packers fan, you wanted it to go the Packers way, getting some early defensive series stops in the running game and forcing them to get into a little more uncomfortable known pass kind of formations. Can they play in that world? Now, the Packers defense, pass defense is pretty banged up, even though they're you know, cobbled together and put back out there. So you might say, well, this might be one of those groups that they can get at them. But I think that's probably your most intriguing thing. Run game first. If that's not there, can Dak Prescott sit back and win a game in the playoffs where they're, you know, putting it up 30 times? So I don't know. But I think, to me, that's probably one of the more intriguing. I think there's a lot more of an unknown element. It's sort of a coin flip there than some of those other three games.
I would say, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you guys both have to run, that the ball control offense of Dallas is going to be huge in this one. Keeping Aaron Rodgers on the sideline will be probably Dallas's best defense.
Yes.
Yeah, but he doesn't need a lot of time to beat you either. But I don't disagree.
Well, guys, I will probably never be able to keep this to 15 minutes other than the fact that we only have two games next week. But
there you go.
I do thank both of you for joining me. Matt, Chatham, where can people find you?
I'm at Chatham58 on Twitter, Football by Football. You can find it at the Football by Football. It's hard to say, my brand. Way to go. Footballbyfootball.com is a website, and you can check out the YouTube page. It's got all of our videos going up. I've got one I'm working on right now on sort of the DeAndre Hopkins, Osweiler, Bermuda Triangle. Like, how has that not been better more consistently? So I'll be putting one up on that here shortly. Brady's doing one on the Packers run defense, trying to fix things against Dallas. And, we're there. And the FBF podcast goes up. We tape on Wednesdays every week. So that'll be up Wednesday afternoon.
Awesome. And M-Dub, where can people find you?
Yeah, drop me a line at Twitter. I'm at Williamson NFL. I'm cranking out about 6 or 7 articles a week. 7 or 8 podcasts a week too at various outlets. The Locked On NFL one's the one I do every day, and it's been a lot of fun. So yeah, I'm not hard to find.
Awesome. Thanks, guys, and hopefully again we'll be able to work this out and talk about some conference championships next week.
See you.
All right, now we have another very special guest here on the Wednesday edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I have Packers podcaster from the APC podcast, Zach Rapport, here on the podcast. Zach, how are you doing?
I'm well, man. How are you doing? It's an honor and a privilege.
Oh, please stop. My honor, my privilege to have you on the show.
Right.
We got talking on Twitter, and you'd sent out an invitation that, hey, if it's Patriots, Packers in the Super Bowl, got to have you on. And of course, I'm always glad to be on any podcast, but I said, never mind that. If the Packers are alive next week, I want you on my podcast. So here we are.
Alive and well.
The Packers remain alive. Let's rewind the clock a little bit. We've talked about this a little bit on the Next Fan Up podcast, but I'm sure you've talked about it on your show, but that date, that turnaround that the Packers had, where basically Aaron Rodgers said, we're going to go and run the table. What has sparked that turnaround?
You know, much has been made about the sort of run the table remark. I think the thing that it really did was sort of buttress the team and give them confidence. You know, when you're having that losing streak, you're down in the dumps and you've got all this peripheral noise out there saying, you know, what's wrong, pondering, you know, what's wrong with the team. And the leader of your team comes out and says, hey, you know, I like our group of guys. I think we can win the rest of the games. I think that's a big deal. But to get, you know, less of the sort of peripheral stuff there. I think when you talk about on field, Jordy Nelson was a big part of it. Jared Cook was a big part of it. And the second coming of Ty Montgomery, if you will, was a huge part of it as well.
Let's talk about a little bit about Ty Montgomery and sort of that Packers running back situation.
Situation, quote unquote.
Well, I mean, Eddie Lacy looked like he was going to do great things for you. Then he's out for the season. James Starks, you know, he turns into a ghost. Now you've got Ty Montgomery, a converted wide receiver. And then, of course, you picked up Christine Michael along the way as the playoffs began. Sort of how do you foresee this running back situation playing out, not just for the rest of this postseason, but moving forward? Is Ty Montgomery your answer?
For the remainder of this season, knock on wood, however long that is, I think that it is definitely a running back by committee cocktail situation with Ty Montgomery, of course, Christine Michael, and let's not forget about Aaron Ripkowski, who sort of came out of the woodwork as a young fullback who can move the pile as good or better than John Kuhn ever could in Green Bay. Going forward, though, to next season, it's so hard to get inside that the mind of Ted Thompson. It's a dangerous place in there inside his head. It's really hard to forecast. I'm in my heart of hearts, I think that Lacy will be back. I think that he wants to be back. And I think that, no pun intended, but he sort of shot himself in the foot this season. I mean, it's a contract year. He gets hurt. He has weight problems again. All these narratives are coming back. And so I wonder what the market for him will be. It's tough to say. You know, there's always teams out there like Indianapolis who are willing to pay a little bit too much for an okay running back. So we'll see how that unfolds. I think that Lacy wants to be back, and I think that Lacy and Montgomery together would be a really interesting and dangerous combo.
Did you, by the way, before all, did you say Aaron Ripkowski was better than the great John Kuhn? Is that allowed in Milwaukee?
he's since unseated him in folklore. Actually, I don't know if it's allowed. People still tweet out whenever Aaron Ripkowski does anything. They tweet out Kuhn.
That's always a tough time when players move on to different teams. It's got to be even tougher.
He kind of looks like John Kuhn, though. He's got the big beard. He's the kind of squat, like, you know, squat white guy with a beard. I don't know what else there is to say.
How much? We're going to talk about the running backs versus Dallas in just a second, but still talking a little bit about that turnaround. I mean, how much do you think Jordy Nelson was a factor in that turnaround? You know, now that we see he's got the broken ribs, if he does play this Sunday, he's going to be playing with broken ribs, which is obviously something superhuman. I mean, do you think that that's going to be a huge blow for you going into the game? Obviously, it's a huge blow.
Yeah, I don't think that he's going to play. He's got, at this point, it's coming out at least two fractured ribs. They're going to reevaluate him on Saturday. He's basically in rehab protocol right now. I highly doubt he will play. I don't think that he should play. I think it's obviously a huge blow, but I think that the team can overcome it. But to sort of back up to the original framing of the question, I think that Jordy has played a huge part this season in that turnaround. You know, he got off to a slow start. I mean, a 30 plus year old receiver coming off of a knee explosion such as his, it's going to take a little bit to get your sea legs under you, and no doubt he's no longer the sort of field stretching second gear burner, you know, fly route kind of wide receiver that he used to be. But he's sort of, as the season progressed, morphed into what we've talked about on our show, is that Larry Fitzgerald mold of a big bodied possession guy, play him all over the field in the slot, get the ball in his hands and see what he can do. And he's excelled in that. But I don't want to undersell Jared Cook's contribution to the offense. I think that Jordy's going to get a lot of credit. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers gets a ton of credit, and it's well-deserved. But Jared Cook, while it doesn't always show up in the stat line, just like JerMichael Finley, is a total field tilter, just a guy who is a mismatch nightmare from the tight end position and just opens up the middle of the field and commands a lot of attention such that other guys are just going to get open. And you've really seen that. He missed a bunch of games in the middle of the year when the Packers were really struggling. He comes back, gets comfortable, and suddenly the Packers are scoring almost 40 points a game. I think it's a no-brainer.
So as you prepare for this game, I mean, what can we expect to see from the Packers? I mean, I mentioned it with the two Matts right before talking with you. I was leaning heavily towards the Packers being the best team on the road to pull off the quote unquote upset this week. But I don't know if I'm feeling it that much anymore, Zach. I mean, did they
give you reason to be pessimistic? Am I missing?
I mean, what should I be looking for? And if I'm expecting the Packers to win this week, what are the things that need to happen for that to happen?
Well, I'll tell you what. I actually rewatched the condensed film of the first Cowboys-Packers matchup earlier today. That was from week 6. And for a lot of that game, it was very competitive. There were just a number of key things that went wrong and the wheels fell off. And one thing, you know, I already mentioned Jared Cook, but he did not play in that game. And again, it was earlier in the season. Jordy Nelson was not himself. And so nobody was getting open. Rodgers was just a little bit off the mark, and the receivers were just slightly not on the same page. So from a Packers offensive perspective, and they still scored some points, but from an offensive perspective, I think they're a whole different animal now. They're a well-oiled machine. Even without Jordy, I think that they can still generate at least 24 points And they'll probably need to score 30 or more to win this game, honestly, but they can still generate points. The issue is going to be stopping the Cowboys. The thing that was really interesting, a few select plays aside, in that first matchup, and I think that this bears true for the Cowboys throughout the season, is that they have just dinked and dunked their way to a ton of victories, just playing very efficient football. Ezekiel Elliott is a monster, and then Dak is just very efficient. A lot of short passes, setting up a few intermediate passes, not a ton of deep bombs. But the Packers really kept them in check for a lot of that game, and even getting pressure. I know that the Cowboys' offensive line is vaunted, and rightly so. They're very good, but I was surprised rewatching that game how much pressure the defensive line of the Packers and the linebackers off the edge were able to get on Dak Prescott, forcing multiple fumbles in that game. So the recipe is there, and I think that the Packers can win. It's going to be, no doubt about it, it's going to be a really tough challenge, but they've got the leash off of Julius Peppers. Clay Matthews is back up to snuff. The line is playing well. I think that we got to get pressure on, and I hate to use we, but it slips in sometimes. We got to get pressure on Dak Prescott. And I think that more so this time around, we have to focus on stopping Ezekiel Elliott. I think that they were content to sort of let him get his 150 yards and were more concerned with containing the pass. I think we might need the opposite strategy this time. It's going to be a tough game.
Just so you know, this is the Next Fan Up podcast. We don't follow the rules set by those former players or by those fans that think that they're higher than others.
In that case, we are going to win.
There you go. Exactly. Well, I mentioned this just before, again, with Matt Williamson, about how I think that the Cowboys' ball control offense, the way that they control the clock, is going to be their best defense against Aaron Rodgers. And he said, totally. You know, but Aaron Rodgers doesn't need that much time to score either. And that was certainly shown in the game last week, where you get him to the 50-yard line, he can huck it up, and all of a sudden a Packer comes down with the ball in the end zone. And he seems to do that in an enormous amount of time with an enormous amount of success. I mean, have there been Hail Marys that Aaron Rodgers has thrown that have not been completed?
There's been a couple, but they're sort of lost in the shuffle. I mean, when you complete three in a little over a calendar year, I think, I mean, that's just ridiculous. I actually, to sort of peel back the curtain a little bit, I live in a studio apartment with my girlfriend. We were both kind of nursing a little hangover that day. So she was asleep. Lights were off. Sound was off. I was watching this game in the dark, in complete silence. And when that happened, I almost bit my tongue off. I was so excited.
I mean, it's amazing. It truly is amazing that he's able to find the one guy who could possibly come down with the ball every single time.
Not to cut you off, but what was really interesting about that play and rewatching it, and Aaron Rodgers talked about this a little bit with sort of the arc that he puts on the ball, which is sort of unlike an arc that any other quarterback puts on the ball or can put on the ball, frankly. I mean, his arm is just that's a fire hose. But the arc on the ball sort of is different and kind of confuses, I think, the coverage team. So if you rewatch specifically that one, and I haven't gone back to the other ones to see if this holds true for them as well, but it's almost as if every other player on the team is watching a different ball. Cobb is like a full yard away from everyone else when he catches that ball. So where was everyone else looking? I don't know. It's uncanny.
I mean, he does have a slight shove, but I don't think the shove made any difference in the fact that he caught the ball.
You know, the defender was facing him, not facing the ball, and also kind of got, he was a little handsy as well. So they could have called it, yes, but on a Hail Mary, you know, they're never going to call that. They just don't.
Plus, and like I said, I don't think it made a difference. I don't think the defender necessarily would have been in a better spot to make a play, or Cobb wouldn't have come down with the ball. So, yeah. The Packers are definitely one of those teams that are fun to watch. And I do think I do think ultimately that Atlanta is going to win their matchup. And, unfortunately, I think the Packers give the Cowboys a good look at what they're going to have to face in the conference championship. I'm sorry. Did I just say your team was going to lose? I mean,
brain on my parade.
You do have a tough matchup, but I do like the thought of a Packers Patriots Super Bowl. It'd be nice to get revenge for that one time.
Yes, all the players on those teams still remaining will really have a lot to fight for.
all of zero.
Yeah.
Zach, where can people hear the show? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Outside Slant, and the show is the APC podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher. It's part of AcmePackingCompany.com, which is part of SB Nation. So go to AcmePackingCompany.com. There's a podcast page there and lots of other sort of fan-centric Packers coverage. The best Packers blog out there, in my humble opinion.
I think it is. Maybe second to our own super fan who writes stuff from time to time, Green Bay Brian, but... he doesn't write that much stuff, Zach, so it's really not in any competition. Zach, thanks so much for joining me, and definitely if we get a chance to speak again when the Super Bowl time comes around, love to have you back.
Book it, man. I'm down. Pod Vader, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
There goes Zach. Thanks to Zach. Thank, of course, to Matt Chatham and Matt Williamson for joining me, and I'll have the Mats here again next week, and hopefully I won't talk to them for 30 minutes when I only ask them for 15 to 20 minutes of their time. But you never know. We love football. When we talk football, we get into it. And if you love football, then please share the show with a friend. To do so, just go to iTunes and hit the review. Review our show, and we'll read it here on the podcast. Subscribe so you don't miss any of our podcasts. We're going to have all sorts of stuff. And of course, we never go away. This show will still have two podcasts a week all through the off season. We only take 1 week off, and that's the week after the Super Bowl. But then we'll be right back at it, talking about the upcoming NFL draft, the combine, all that good stuff. Free agency is right around the corner. It's a lot closer than we might think. But before we even get to the offseason, let's get through this postseason. So remember, subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also listen to the show on Stitcher, AHA Radio, TuneIn Radio. And if you got one of those wonderful Amazon Echo devices, remember, all you need to do is say, "Alexa, please play the Next Fan Up podcast." And she'll play it straight from TuneIn. It's fantastic. So all those ways are the ways that you can listen to the podcast, and you can share all of those ways of listening to the podcast with your best buddies who also enjoy talking about football nonstop. I'll be back again tomorrow with the preview with all the super fans. Until then, here's Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.